Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, you and I are both chomping at the bit to do an NFL preview show, but we're not going to do it today. We've got a number of topics that require our attention, a number of uniform-related things. There's nothing you and I love to discuss more, it seems, than men's fashion, while also being straight men ourselves, but we can't help ourselves. We got alternate helmets, we got city uniforms, lots of things that require our attention this morning. But before we get into all of it, Pipe, let's take a quick break, pay some bills.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, we're back. Before we get into the uniform stuff, Piper, I want to talk Kyler Murray. And I want to talk Kyler Murray's new contract writer that is now apparently torn up and gone. What a disaster this whole Kyler Murray experience has been. I want to get your like high level thoughts on it before I drill down into some questions for you.
I think it's delightful when a generational gap conflict is just summed up in a contract clause.
Yeah.
It amused me to no end. So, because I sit firmly between the two generations.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of look at it and I look at the old guy and I'm like, you're nuts. And I look at the young guy and I'm like, you might have deserved it, but you're kind of nuts too. And there's, you know, so for listeners, if I understood it correctly, the contract clause was basically like a no video games first, like, or limit the amount of video games you play, so that you watch at least, I think it was 4 hours of film a week.
Yeah. And just for context, I'm a 46-year-old man who's like barely employed in the football industry. I watch north of 4 hours a week. Like, 4 hours is baseline for me. And he's the quarterback of an NFL team getting paid untold millions to do this job. So just for perspective.
Yeah. And like I said, I sit firmly between these things where I'm like, yeah. I came up with the video game generation, but like it has far outpaced me. You know, yeah, I'm, you know, the whole online gaming world is way beyond anything, you know, we played on like N64 and Xbox and whatever.
Yeah.
And, but also I'm now raising kids and like, this is exactly the kind of rules or deal I make with them when the school year starts. You know, no screens during the school week so that your homework gets, like, only screens for doing school projects, those kinds of things. And it's, so I'm like, yeah, this is exactly the generation we're in, but it's so funny that it's in a contract paying somebody hundreds of millions of dollars to be a professional. Like, you're basically saying, we're signing our franchise over to you, we're depending on you, we're also going to treat you like a tiny child.
Now limit your screen time, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay. Too many screens. They want to limit his screen time so that he could get more screen time.
Right.
For his job. It's just remarkable. It's an amazing thing.
It smacks of like, so when I used to work, I worked at Moody Publishers for a while, and they were trying to figure out, you know, they were always a little heavy-handed with employees, you know, being a sort of fundamentalist institution. And there was a lot of like, now we expect you not to use social media on the computers, the work computers, and that kind of thing. And again, this was 10, 11 years ago. So social media didn't have quite the same, you know, ubiquity that it does now.
That's right.
But it had sort of that, like, I'm grown and you've asked me to do a job. Do you or do you not? Like, let the results speak for themselves. Do you or do you not trust me? If I was Kyler, I would look at this and think, they absolutely think that I'm a child. They do not trust me. That's what that clause says. Even if it's entirely justified because he doesn't do any film study, which I don't know. Right. That he does have a bit of a reputation for that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a fascinating question, and it speaks really at a high, high level to, like, how good is Kyler? You know what I mean? And, I mean, I'm reminded of, like, conflicts between quarterbacks and coaches dating way back to, like, the 80s, even a little bit before your time. Like, John Elway and Dan Reeves didn't get along. Like, Elway kind of did his own thing a lot. And, I mean, I think Phil Simms and Bill Parcells had their issues at times. And it's like, these guys that we look at through the kind of lens of the rearview mirror as perfect, iconic quarterbacks, you know, they had their issues with coaches and their issues with freelancing. And I think when you're a physical kind of marvel, when you can do unusual things and you've been the best on the field since birth, maybe the film study doesn't feel as pressing. But it kind of got me thinking, Piper, what would some of the analogs be in, like, our industries? Like, if you were a pastor and there was one part of pastoring that you just didn't like doing, like, oh, commentaries, I hate them. Sermon prep. This is Ronnie, basically, right? Isn't he always complaining about commentaries?
Oh, so if you're, and just research of any kind. He hates research.
Right, right. I want to speak, but I don't want to study. You know, Ronnie is Kyler Murray, minus the video games. So maybe it's social media for Ronnie. So maybe into his contract you bake in, like, no Twitter unless you put in 4 hours of, like, commentary work a week. You know, we got to make sure that sermon is, you know, at least researched at a baseline level. For me, it would be grading. It'd be like, ah, Cluck, he's a great teacher, but he just doesn't grade, you know? So, like, no, maybe I don't get to watch football until I've graded.
If for you, it'd be the opposite. It would be no film study until your grading is done.
Exactly.
You do not get to watch neck-rolled fullbacks from 1993 until you have graded those essays.
No Mike Allstott tape until you've graded the essays. Yeah. I actually, my elegant solution is to grade while watching film. So I kind of get both then. And I'm doing both at a very low level then.
But if I was your student, I would absolutely want that, because I always wanted my professors to, like, I was like, I hope they're in a good mood when they grade this, because I just feel like there's a little more opportunity for grace. And distraction is nice too, because you might be able to slip some BS by them. So, like, if you were in a good mood and slightly distracted by Allstott running over, you know, Ed McDaniel and the Vikings, then win-win for all parties.
Great. Yeah. Allstott running over Ed McDaniel is just that's a happy 90s memory all the way around. So I'll take it.
Not for me.
Not for you. Definitely.
I mean, it's delightful in its era, but also a lot of crushed dreams by Mike Allstott. He ate the Vikings alive.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, he had some epic games against the Vikings. Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things, dude, where, like, I think you have two types of, and I'd be curious to see where you fall on this continuum. And I'm not even sure where I fall on it. In terms of your football watching or your football fandom, are you drawn more to, like, the singular talent? Like, Kyler Murray does two or three jaw-dropping things a game. Now, he also does two or three, like, completely inexplicable boneheaded things a game, including, like, sulking on the sideline and seeming completely disinterested if his team goes down by, like, more than one touchdown or whatever. He's, like, maybe the worst body language guy ever. Also, where are you at on body language? Does that matter to you? Are you, like, a body language enthusiast when it comes to these guys?
It depends on the position.
Yeah.
I don't care at all about it when it comes to wide receivers. I just assume that wide receivers are going to be mad and pout and stuff. It matters when it's quarterbacks and coaches, because they set the tone for the team. Like, they, and so if a quarterback is, you know, sulking, like, the whole, everybody depends on him. Everybody works around him. Everybody works for him. You know, when coaches lose their minds, I'm always like, that doesn't seem like a good look, you know?
Yeah.
Or they get somebody by the face mask and like they're spitting in their face and chewing them out. So yeah, body language matters. It matters to me more in a sport like basketball, where it's a smaller number of people, so everybody's influence is greater, and they have to work as a unit.
Yeah.
Whereas in football, like, football's an isolated sport in the sense of, like, you have your job to do. You can't...
Right.
You might be aware of what everybody else is supposed to do, but you really only have to worry about your assignment. And you do your assignment perfectly, and somebody else blows it. The whole team looks bad, but you did your job. So I don't worry about it as much there.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. Like, are you drawn in general more to, like, the singular talent or more to the, you know, the narrative around Peyton Manning all those years was, oh, nobody works harder. He's in the film room, you know, 90 hours a week. And I know people who were really, like, delighted by that narrative. And it seemed to validate something in them. You know what I mean? And maybe this is a function of living in Tennessee, but a lot of people sort of put their own sort of cosmic philosophical values on Peyton Manning to some degree, and which always kind of, I get a kick out of that because it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, he spent what, 3 years at the University of Tennessee, and the entire state now believes that he's like our, you know, baby Jesus.
He's whatever you want him to be. He's either a Christian or he's like,
he's
a legendary party animal, he's Republican, he's a Democrat, he's whatever you want him to be.
Yeah, kissing babies, shooting deer, whatever you want him to be.
Right.
And yeah, what it comes down to for me is end results. I like watching. So, like, if I could watch, like, Cam Newton in his peak versus Tom Brady or Peyton Manning in their peak.
Yeah.
The contrast in styles was really fun. And Cam Newton had a reputation as supreme talent, didn't work that hard, but he was actually, I think he was actually a student of the game. You know, there's that great video clip going around where I think they're playing the Packers. And who was the Packers? Kind of the Thor-looking dude with the long hair.
Clay Matthews Jr.
Yeah, Clay Matthews. Yeah. I think it was Clay Matthews, calls out a play. Cam's under center, and he's like, oh, you watch film, that's cute, watch this. Audibles into a play that scores him a touchdown, and then, you know, swears at Clay and runs off the field. And
that is epic.
So, but again, end result. Tom Brady and Peyton Manning got where they were by being psychotic about film study. Cam Newton was a student of the game, but a supreme physical talent, like more physically talented at quarterback than maybe anybody we've watched in the last 20 years, 100 years, I don't know, just in terms of size, speed, big arm, etc.
Right.
Same thing with like Michael Vick versus Peyton Manning back in the day. I'm drawn to watching both of these guys be awesome and going, these are massively contrasting styles, which makes it more fun. There's no automaton here.
Yeah, I think we forget what a fun watch Michael Vick was. You know, when he was right, when he was on, like, nobody accelerated faster than that guy. I mean, he was really, really interesting to watch. I think you make a good point, you know, and if the Cardinals win 12 games this year and go deep into the playoffs, then all this is forgotten and it's a footnote in the annals of Kyler Murray history. But definitely a fascinating kind of 2022 time capsule thing, in that it also involves social media. There was the whole like scrubbing of one's Instagram account of the team in order to get what one wants, which as a man over a certain age, this seems just laughably ridiculous, and yet it's, you know, very much a part of the DNA of right now, and I think people of a certain age view it as not at all ridiculous. Where are you at on that aspect of it?
It is one of those things that very much I look at and I go, oh, yep, they're a lot younger than me. I'm separated from this thing. Because, imagine working for any business these days and somebody unfollows the business on social media. You'd be like, too bad, you know, whatever.
But
sports is entertainment. And when the star refuses to be part of the PR.
Right.
You've lost an asset. You know, it's like, you know, if Will Smith is in a movie in 10 years when they allow him to make movies again, and he's just like, I'm not going to do the press junkets. I'm not going on Letterman. I'm not, you know, I'm not promoting this movie that I was in.
Yeah.
You got a problem. That's a little bit what it's like because social media is the PR for the team.
Yeah.
It's still funny to me that it's that much leverage though. Like that is just a dimension that is not first and foremost in my mind.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a crazy part of this offseason, you know, with the receivers leveraging it for all their trades. And if you had told me, you know, 12, 15 years ago, kind of at the beginning of social media, that it would play this heavily into like actual NFL things that are actually happening, I would have laughed. But here we are.
When it also makes me wonder, like, how much does that play in, or is that just sort of the thing that everybody notices? And the management is like, I do not care. You know, really, this is all a question of money.
Yeah.
And he's going to throw his little tantrum on Instagram, and who cares? This is really about, can we get the deal worked out? And he'll sign on the dotted line, and Drew Rosenhaus or whoever his agent is gets their cut, and like we all go home slightly dissatisfied, but generally happy.
Yeah. So last Kyler thing on that note, do you think it was a good deal? Do you think they did the right thing? In light of the quarterback landscape, in light of other options that would or wouldn't be out there theoretically, like, because I think they were really between a rock and a hard place with this one, in the sense that like the physical flashes have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
But the overall product has been, you know,
well,
I don't know. Like, it depends who you ask, but I'm dubious about it. I'm not a fan of the signing. I want to know what your thoughts are.
Well, like, it's hard for me to look at that signing in a vacuum because everything else they've done has been stupid. So
that's
like,
true.
Like, the Cardinals are a horrendously run organization because they have a, you know, he just came off his rookie contract. They didn't take advantage of that. They had whatever, 3-4, or this will be the contract after his rookie contract.
Yeah.
You know, so they had these cost control, low cost years. And they're signing like J.J. Watt on one leg and A.J. Green on no legs. And, you know, they traded for DeAndre Hopkins, which is that was like the one good move they made. They've had a bad offensive line forever. And so I look at it and I'm like, was it a good contract? Maybe. But everything else they did was dumb, so they're still going to be bad. And I also have no idea how to look at quarterback contracts anymore for two reasons. One, they keep escalating. But they keep escalating, and so does the cap. So if every contract outpaces the last one, you'd think they would hit a ceiling of like, okay, that has to come down. But also the cap is supposed to jump a ton, so they actually become less burdensome on the team. Yeah. And it's so clear that you cannot win in the NFL without a great quarterback. And it's insufferable to have a terrible quarterback. So the middle class of quarterbacks keeps getting rich. See Kirk Cousins.
Right.
And he's not good enough to lead the team to a Super Bowl unless everything is right. And even then, I don't trust him. I think Kyler's in the same boat. But you can't not pay him.
Yeah.
So it's
Kyler's a more marketable, toolsy, interesting version of being in the same boat. You know, our perception of Kyler is that he has this unbelievable ceiling, but in reality, he may be more in the Kirk Cousins neighborhood of like 12th to 18th in the league, depending on how he's playing on a certain Sunday.
Yeah, like per play, he might have one of the top two or three ceilings in the NFL. Per season, he's like 10 to 15 in the league.
That's a great point.
And Cousins' ceiling is, you know, eight. His floor is like 12. Whereas Kyler's ceiling is 2 and his floor is 27. So the variation, it's like a home run hitting baseball player who strikes out a ton or hits into a lot of double plays. Like, he's going to hit some big ones and he's going to really frustrate you with a man on third and the inability to get the run in kind of thing.
Yeah, no doubt, man. No doubt. Well, Pipe, let's take a break. Then we'll come back and talk some aesthetic things. All right, Piper, we're back. Let's stay in the NFL since we're talking about the NFL. This was a year in which NFL teams got the green light to experiment with their helmets a little bit and do some changing in terms of colors. In the past, they always had to work with the color palette of their main helmet. Ostensibly, this was for safety reasons, which sounded always like BS. And as it turns out, it was BS. So
just everything in the NFL is always about money. It just is.
Yeah.
Even safety is about money.
Oh, definitely, dude. Yeah, this is a very unsafe thing we're all doing here, hurling our bodies at each other every week in this way. So make no mistake about it. Not safe. Never has been. But we have some new helmets to talk about, Pipe, and this is always fun. I would say of the 13 new helmets, I love about half of them, and I hate the other half. And there's really no in between for me.
I would venture to say that's a pretty good ratio. Like, that's higher than I would have guessed.
Yeah, no, I know. Usually I'm historically pretty cranky about stuff like this. But some of these are improvements, actually. And some of them are you know, the other direction. So I want to talk about a few of my favorites, and then I want to hear your favorites, and then hear about some that you hate. So, not surprisingly, top tier for me, Giants, Patriots, Falcons. They all went with a, like, 1980s homage. The Giants, it's the big block. Giants on the side, the red stripe down the middle. This is the Lawrence Taylor, Mark Bavaro, Phil Sims, Joe Morris helmet. And I love it. It's a beauty. It's clean. It harkens back to, like, the best era of Giants football. That's a win. The Patriots went with their 1980s white helmet with the three stripes on the white palette. The Pat Patriot, like, snapping the football on the side. I thought always this was one of the more creative, visually interesting, fun helmets in the league. It looks really great with that red jersey. I think that's a solid move for them. And then, dude, the one that I'm really, like, going to war for, the red and black Falcons helmet. Like, this one would be, they were in, like, the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It just predated Deion Sanders. This is a beautiful helmet. And why they haven't made this their main helmet all these years, I can't explain it.
Yeah, it's a beauty to me. It screams like Andre Rison to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I say that as a good thing.
Yeah, it's just interesting. And their helmet, or their whole uniform right now is one of the more disastrous, I think, uniforms in the league. It's just kind of a mess. But this helmet would give it some gravitas, some weight in history. I really like the helmet. Those are my top three, with the Texans at very close with an honorable mention. So the Texans went with just kind of a red metallic helmet with, like, a blown up version of their logo on it. I think it looks really sharp. It's a really good looking helmet. They've been wearing it in training camp. It looks nice. So shout out to the Texans for a job well done there. Pipe, what are your favorites?
Oh, there's the Texans. Okay. Yeah, see, here's the, generally speaking, there are two directions that can work for alternate uniforms, I think. One is retro.
Yeah.
Assuming it's like a commitment, like Pat the Patriot is a commitment to the retro. So they just brought it back, looks really good. The other is a team that doesn't actually have any branding or style, just improving their helmet.
Yeah.
So, like, the Texans. The Texans have been around for, what, like, 10, 15, well, probably 15, 20 years?
Yeah, 20 years.
And which is, but they're a non-entity when it comes to sort of, like,
dude, you're right.
Historic style, whatever.
So if you put a gun to the average person's head and said, describe the Texans uniform, they would struggle with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people, and there are color schemes that are just kind of boring. And so, like, red, white, and blue, sorry, America, kind of boring. Black and red, not great. Anything that's a black-based uniform, generally terrible. Ravens, Panthers, Jaguars. Who else has done black-based? Eagles have gone a lot
the
of
Eagles
black.
Are experimenting with it, yeah, and it always looks
It always looks like any given Sunday. Like, it just, it looks dumb.
The Miami Sharks.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, generally... So, retro is good. Redesigning something that doesn't have any like, I wish the Titans would do something, because, you know, we've talked about this at length. They're just, they're boring. They have no style. They don't have an identity.
It's busy but boring.
Yeah.
Like, it's the busiest uniform in the league and also the boringest, which seems incongruous, but it is the case.
So, I would agree that the ones you picked are solid. I actually kind of like what Dallas has done with theirs, because, again, it I don't think it is retro, but it feels retro.
Actually, it is retro. So, like, late 1950s, early 60s, and like Cowboys historians might come at me on this. Maybe I've gotten the years wrong, but this was their helmet aesthetic, I think, for a while. The white base, the basic blue star, yeah, the two stripes. It's a good look, and I feel like they've gone to it occasionally in years past. Like, I feel like DeMarcus Ware wore this helmet a few times. But it's good looking for sure.
Yeah, I like clean, and yes, minimal. And mm-hmm, that, yeah, the white base with the blue star looks sharp. Mm-hmm. I abhor the Saints. The Saints is so terrible. Bad.
I'm glad you brought this up. I was just about to bring it up. Yeah, talk about why it's bad.
Anything that has gradations in a uniform, uh-huh, is terrible. You know, yeah, the sort of like ombre, like one color bleeding into another, which is what this looks like. So it's a black, yeah, helmet. Again, bad start.
Yeah.
Especially because that gold helmet that they wore, like, I don't love the Saints uniforms, but the gold helmet, yeah, had kind of a classic look. So black helmet, yeah, gold fleur-de-lis, but then it has a stripe down the middle of miniature... What is it fleurs de lis? I don't really know.
Yeah.
Plural in French. Those little symbols, right, running down to the back, and it comes to a point in the back. So it looks like college helmet stickers.
Like an XFL helmet. Yeah.
And then the player's number big on the back. Like everything about this looks like, Division 1 AA or whatever that division's called now.
Yeah.
You know, Coastal Southeastern Technical School of Louisiana.
Except on a Tuesday night, like, yeah, Tuesday night ESPN Mac game or whatever. Yeah, to me, the Saints have done the least with the most ingredients uniform-wise for the past 20 years. Like, you look at what the Saints could bring to the table uniform-wise, and you're like, oh, this could be a top third of the league uniform. And consistently, they've fallen on their face. They've consistently gone with, like, black jersey, black pants, which looks pajamic, as we've discussed before. It was a bad looking uniform through really the whole Drew Brees era, which is a shame. Like, you got to go all the way back to like Jim Everett and Sam Mills to find a Saints uniform that didn't suck. And, the gold pants, Sam Mills, the black jersey, the kind of basic gold helmet with a black fleur-de-lis, that was a good helmet. But, the Saints kind of perennially disappointing here in the helmet realm. I want to talk about one. I actually want to talk about two that could have been real easy. They could have been home runs, but these teams both dropped the ball. Jets and the Eagles. The Jets were just like, we're going to do a black helmet with our same forgettable logo on it. So, all right, we have a black helmet, completely forgettable. The Eagles have been experimenting with this, like, incorporate black into our already dark green uniforms for years. It's always looked like trash. And they doubled down on black as well, going with just a black helmet. Whereas these teams both have like epic throwback helmets in their archives that they could have gone with. The Eagles could have gone with Randall Cunningham era, Keith Byers era helmet. The Jets could have gone with the Richard Todd era, you know, just the plain green with the white kind of block Jets. Kind of their answer to the Giants helmet. But they didn't, and they screwed it up.
It's a tiny list of colors that goes well with green. And and black is not one of them on a uniform. I mean, so like, let's take it to a different sport. You got the Boston Celtics. Classic green and white uniforms. They're simple, they're crisp, they're clean. Like, they have looked basically the same since, you know, John Havlicek. And then they start doing like these gray uniforms and black uniforms. You're like, it looks terrible. They look stupid. Mm-hmm. And you've just ruined a thing, which is exactly what the Eagles and the Jets have done. Like, bringing black into green doesn't work. You've got green and white, and that's it. That's what you got. Just work with those. That's a really solid, clean baseline. And they're just like, what if we make it look muted and dumb? How about we go with that for our fun uniforms?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Philly, they kind of go into that Saints bucket for me of the upside has been really high with their uniform. They could have done some amazing things with it, but the last 20 years have been just a disappointment uniform-wise in Philadelphia.
I have a question for you, and it applies to two different teams. So it's the teams that have three colors as their base uniform, And and so they pull in what has been an accent color as the main one.
Okay.
And I have mixed feelings about it. So you got the Bears.
Yeah.
Orange jerseys, orange helmet. They've always had orange as an accent color. It's not, and you know, so it's been like the lettering on their helmet or whatever. Now it's the main color for these uniforms. And then the other is the Bengals, who have always been orange and black as their main with white as an accent. Now white is the primary. And
yeah,
I can't decide. These are the ones that I'm like, I don't know if these are great or really hideous.
We'll have to see them on TV, dude. I'm kind of in your camp on this, in the sense that, yeah, I'm having trouble with it. I'm having trouble as a Bears fan. So here's my issue with the Bears. I think if you like put me in a vacuum with no access to history or my feelings or my memories and showed me the helmet, I would be like, oh, I like that. That looks cool. That sort of kind of that Bears C, the Chicago C, the font, like it just always looks good. It looks classy and it looks cool on the orange. The Bengals helmet, I think I like it because it's got some like fidelity to the original. I think it's going to look really cool on TV, especially if they don't screw it up and go with an all black kind of motif beneath it.
Yeah.
You know, I think if they wear it with like a normal black and orange jersey, it's going to look really cool. But
that
kind of all depends on what they do with it.
That's my general sense with these. Because like when you look at what the Eagles and the Jets did, they pulled in a third color that looks dumb. It doesn't work. Whereas these other teams, they have a color scheme. They just pulled something else to the front. I'm picturing Bengals in white uniforms, white helmets with black stripes, playing against the Steelers in black and gold.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is going to look really good on a Sunday night. That's it. Sunday night football is going to look real sharp.
Dude,
when those
right.
two teams play.
Under the lights, that'll be sharp.
Or that, like, that'll that against the Browns sharp. With their orange and brown.
Yeah.
That, it's definitely. The contrast is great. And I think the Bears works, too, because it still feels like the Bears uniform. It doesn't feel like they went and, like went to a costume shop or something.
Yeah, exactly. Pipe, with these last two, I want to get a little pastoral and just extend some sympathy to the fan bases of the Washington Commanders.
They have a fan base?
I was going to say, few and far between anymore. But and the Arizona Cardinals. It's been a tough kind of preseason for the Cardinals anyway. The throwback or the alternate helmet is not going to help. It's just boring. It's black. This looks like, you know how Louisville changes their uniform like every 2 weeks in college football and they're always playing on a Thursday night and it's like, oh, here's Louisville in their like, you know, ninth alternate uniforms against, I don't know, Temple.
Yeah, they don't even have a uniform anymore. It's all alternates. They wear them each once a season and then throw them away.
Exactly. And then the Commanders, is there a more disappointing kind of top to bottom entire experience in professional sports than the Washington Commanders?
Carson Wentz says no.
Exactly.
Actually, Dan Snyder says no. He is the king of disappointment. But it's
brutal.
When I saw when they named them the Commanders and then they came out with those uniforms, I was just like, they are in fact committed to boring. I think maybe a year or two ago we did an NFL episode on which teams matter the least, which ones are the most boring. And I think we forgot that Washington existed.
Yeah, as it should be. They're completely forgettable.
Yeah, and they have solidly committed to being forgettable.
Yeah.
Their name, their uniforms, their quarterback.
I mean, their roster, by and large.
Yeah, like,
you know.
The best thing about their team is the defensive line, which, you know, unless you're Aaron Donald, is pretty forgettable.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're going to waste it for sure. Kind of wandering around in the quarterback.
Their best player is named Terry. Like
Terry. What a great name, though. You know,
I mean, if the best player on your church league softball team is named Terry, you're in trouble. And it's not great for an NFL team.
That's true, dude. That's such a good insight. Best player named Terry. Not a lot to be hopeful about there. Even like the feeling that you get when you're flipping around like Sunday Ticket and you hit like you get the Commanders game, you're just like, oh, I want to click away from this as quickly as possible.
Yeah, is there any other team you would click away from faster? I think Well,
yeah,
I think Seattle is faster now. I think I would completely skip Seattle.
Carolina, maybe. I'm always kind of disappointed when it's Carolina. But even Carolina, there's a couple guys I'm halfway interested in watching on their roster. Yeah. Like when Christian McCaffrey's healthy, you know, he's a fun watch. Brian Burns can get after the quarterback a little bit.
They have some decent wide receivers who make some plays if the quarterback is, you know, not utter trash.
Yeah. I'm still a Darnold shareholder, so I've got a little skin in the game with the Panthers.
See, that was a stock I held on to too long thinking it would rebound, and in fact, it has tanked.
I'm going down on the Darnold ship, I think. It's you know, we're calling for the lifeboats at this point. But yeah, no, Carolina, the Commanders, those are quick flip-aways. If Atlanta, I think, you know, in that conversation being that their most interesting player is a running back who's actually a wide receiver. So,
I think it's a tight end, which is...
Well, yeah, you've got Kyle Pitts, who's a glorified receiver playing tight end.
But again, like, if your most exciting player is a tight end...
Yeah.
Boof, that's rough.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a tough deal, for sure, all the way around. And the uniform's terrible. So, yeah, top to bottom, pretty disappointing experience there with the Falcons. Piper, we should move this along, just in the interest of time. That was a fun discussion. We'll come back. We'll talk some MLB. All right, Piper, we're back. We have MLB. What do they call these? I always conflate the leagues. Do they call them City Connect? Yeah, they do.
They
MLB City Connect uniforms.
Which, can we pause and consider that name for a moment?
Yeah, please. Let's do it. Unpack the whole thing.
What is connected to what? Some of these teams are not named after cities. They're named after states.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
What is being connected? It's more like disconnected from. I mean, there's nothing about this is connected. They're not connected to the previous uniforms. They're not connected to the cities. They're not connected to good design. It is
not connected to history.
No, I mean, as far as I know, they're not even connected to the fans. Like, I don't even think fans like these things.
Yeah. So to me, there's a couple aspects of this kind of at a high level, and then we can drill down into specifics. One aspect of this pipe is the, if I'm only going to the ballpark once a year factor. So, like, yeah, growing up, money wasn't growing on trees. So if I went to a big league game, I was going once a year. You know what I mean? I was going to see the Reds in Cincinnati, or I was going to see the Cubs in Chicago with my grandpa. I'm going once a year. And if the once a year that I go as a kid is the day that they're wearing their crappy, like, ninth alternate City Connect uniform, I mean, I'm still having a good time because I'm with my dad or my grandpa or whatever, but I'm a little disappointed. You know what I mean?
Right.
If I go to see the Cubs and they're wearing their, like, stupid Wrigleyville jerseys, I'm a little bummed out. So there's that. The other aspect of this is the fact that the NBA did it, and it was disastrous and a joke and, like, to me, hateable across the board in the NBA. And then the MLB sees it and they're like, oh, we'll do the same thing. You know, that seems like a great idea. We'll butcher our uniforms and our history in the same way. So I think just a bad idea, but I want to zip through these and see.
Well, quick thought on that.
Yeah.
I disliked the NBA uniforms. I generally hate alternate uniforms. I mean, just as a rule, don't do it. Even if they're good, just don't do it. The odds of improving on your actual uniform are not great. I will say this. The NBA aesthetic culture, totally, these worked there. They worked for the fans. They worked for jersey sales. There is not a historic, like, people are not historically in love with, you know, there's not the nostalgia about uniforms in the NBA. MLB is a different ethos altogether. Where
that is very true.
Like, when you go to Wrigley Field, you want to see white pinstripes.
Yes.
Or white jersey, blue pinstripes, I should say. When you go to Yankee Stadium, you want to see white jersey, blue pinstripes. When you go to Boston, you want to see crisp white uniform, Red Sox across the front. You know?
Yeah.
And so these things are actually, like, they're not moving us into the 21st century. They're, like, disconnecting us from the things that we love about the game. And maybe I'm speaking as an old person, but, like, 11 children like baseball in the first place. And the reason they do is because their dads do.
Yeah,
so,
that's
like,
true.
Let us love it instead of fouling it up.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think you make a good point with the NBA. But even with the NBA, there are a few franchises that should be just locked in a glass case. Don't touch the uniform. Like the Celtics are one of them.
Yeah.
I don't want to see the Celtics wearing like a blue and orange uniform. Or even the Lakers, dude. And I realize like things have gotten weird with the Lakers over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years or whatever. But like, I don't know, to me that kind of purple and gold Laker Magic era uniform, put it in a glass case. That's your uniform, you know, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. This is the uniform that you're wearing. And there are a few like that. And there are a few like that in MLB as well. So to me, and I want to get your take on this. This is more of a high level thing. The ones that I felt the most positive about in terms of the MLB City Connect uniforms were connected to the franchises that, much like the Texans, kind of had no identity and no history anyway. So it's like, take a franchise like the Colorado Rockies. They've never had a good uniform.
It's because they started with purple and black.
They started in the 90s, and you know I love all things 90s, but one of the mistakes of the 90s was purple and black. So see also Sacramento Kings. A lot of people
the
went
Ravens.
With, yeah, the Baltimore Ravens. A lot of people went with purple and black in the 90s. It was a bad idea. So I don't know, unless you live in like Denver, you don't care about the Colorado Rockies. The uniform means nothing to you. So this alternate I'm looking at here with, okay, it's green and white, which makes no sense. That's not the color scheme of the team, but again, whatever. It, to me, they should have made it look like a Coors can. You know what I mean? They should have made it look like a silver, like Coors Light can. That would have made the most sense.
And then like as a player warms up, the jersey changes colors?
Yeah, exactly. As the player gets warmer, the jersey changes colors. Dude, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. That's some next level like marketing talk right there. That would have been good. So the Rockies one, I'm not like, I don't hate it. Maybe they should have gone with some weed related thing, you know? Like I don't know.
I just love that the best thing we can say is I don't hate it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, others that we don't hate. You know, Miami can do whatever it wants. The Miami Marlins.
Yeah, I mean,
no history.
They
no
have
anything.
Changed.
Yeah.
Well, they started with that 90s black and teal. Teal was another 90s big hit. I think they kind of teal because it tied in with the, it was kind of the Miami Dolphins kind of their thing.
Yeah.
But they've changed their colors. They went from Florida Marlins to Miami Marlins. They've changed their color scheme. Yeah, they can do whatever they want. I kind of like theirs. It also, one of the coolest things about theirs is that it looks a little bit, it's almost got a tie-in to like the Cuban national team.
Yeah,
it has that is the
true.
Red and blue. And those uniforms are kind of classic and sharp looking. So I don't, theirs are fine.
Yeah. Dude, the Washington Nationals, where are you at on that? Again, this is a team with like, it kind of does have some history actually, if you go deep into it, but
I wish they had just done the Expos uniform for theirs.
Yeah, dude, that old Expos uniform was dope.
It bothers me. I mean, not like morally bothers me, but it's just it's so petty that they have completely cut ties with, you know, they moved from Montreal. That team was cool, had some amazing players, and it's like they've scrubbed the history of it. Like it never happened. And I'm like, but Larry Walker and, you know, Pedro Martinez and who else was on those teams? I mean, there was so many good
Rod Carew was on those teams for a while.
Yeah, Vladimir Guerrero Sr. and so on and so forth. And, the Nationals are, like, they have boring uniforms normally. This one is also boring, but they kind of tied in. It is one that's actually connected to the city. But I will say pink cherry blossoms doesn't scream baseball to me. That screams, like, middle-aged ladies trying to time their visit to D.C.,
Yeah, it looks like a hipster's like wedding invitation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if I opened this from one of my students who graduated 6 years ago, I would be like, oh.
Yeah, you know, or like a
Caitlin's getting married. How nice.
Or like one of those silk printed short sleeve shirts that guys wear unbuttoned down to their navels. That kind of looks like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't like the Padres, but I really appreciate the boldness.
Okay, here's my issue with the Padres. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Other than the fact that it's hideous?
Yeah, it's hideous. It's awful. The Padres have a great uniform.
Yes.
And the Padres already have like a kind of they're getting a blue ribbon for most creative anyway in terms of making the color scheme work and making it work really well. Like the Padres have every reason to just hold their head high uniform-wise anyway. despite not having, like, I mean, they're not the Yankees, they're not the Red Sox, they're not the Cubs, they don't have one of these, like, historic franchises, but they have a cool uniform. That's been, like, their corner of the market for years. And this thing, this thing looks like, it's like when your parents, like, you go to visit them and they got, like, a quote-unquote new, like, Mexican restaurant in their city that they want to try, but you know it's going to be, like, the other nine that they liked previously, and you go...
You're like, oh, Don Pablo's, I've heard of that.
Yeah, exactly. You go and, like, this is the color scheme, and you're like, all right, we're doing this again. That's what the Padres uniform looks like. I want to talk about one that I'm morally opposed to.
I was gonna guess it was either gonna be the Cubs, but my first thought was Boston.
It's Boston. Like, what are we doing with the color scheme? Like, this looks like a Ukrainian soccer jersey, and I like the Ukraine. My kids are from there. I have good feelings
also,
about it.
Also, these are the colors for Ukraine's flag, so it makes sense for them.
Yeah, yeah, it makes all the sense in the world for Ukraine's soccer team to have this color scheme. But for the Boston Red Sox, iconic, historic, to have this color scheme, I'm not into it. This is bad.
Is there any, like, is there a history in Boston? Like, is this supposed to symbolize, like, something about, you know, I don't know, the high seas and all the gold in Tammany Hall or something? Like, what are we talking about?
Actually, I'm reading about it, and I feel stupid. Apparently, this was their first uniform. Like, in 1907, their primary colors were blue and yellow. So, I don't know, man. I still don't like it. Here's one that I can kind of live with. The Diamondbacks.
That has a different uniform every year.
That's the thing. If you stopped me on the street and said, describe the Diamondbacks uniform, I couldn't do it. Even though they've been with us for 25 years. So this one, I don't hate it.
You know one that's really good?
What?
Really good. The Angels.
Dude, I was just going to say that. That's cool looking. Really, really cool looking. And, yeah, they're one of those teams. They're kind of like the Padres in that my perception of the Angels is always they were always like LA's other team. I've kind of always liked the Angels uniform, especially in the 80s and 90s growing up. I thought they had a cool look. Of late, it's been kind of forgettable. This one is bold. This one looks very like early to mid 1960s to me in a very cool way, and I dig it. Yeah, talk about it.
Yeah, it is reminiscent stylistically of like the 1960s and 70s Reds teams. Like Johnny Bench could have worn this, except you know, different city. It has that feel to it. I love the hat. So the red back, white front panel, big red A. It says Angels in like a it looks almost like a hand painted sign. So not cartoony, but like an old sign. It's one that actually looks like it has a retro vibe. It looks like the city and it looks like the team. I don't know.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean,
it's good design.
If I lived in Anaheim and cared about this team, I would pull the trigger on this hat immediately. Like I would own it right away, which I'm sure is the whole point.
I have another one that I'm morally opposed to. And it is the Cubs. And
talk about it.
Goodness, I don't even know what to say without like cursing.
Yeah,
they changed the colors. So the Cubs have always been royal blue. You know, just that crisp blue really pops on a sunny day, which all their games are on sunny days because they don't play night games for the most part.
Yeah,
the simple red block C, and then they went navy blue or almost navy blue, and it says Wrigleyville in like. The kind of font that is on, like, this is the kind of shirt you would buy at the tourist shop next to the Cubby Bear across from Wrigley Field for, like, $38. It's like a jersey. Yeah. And, they're so dumb looking. And they have one of the two or three best total aesthetic packages in baseball between the stadium, the history, the ivy. Their uniform is not spectacular, but it's perfect for the setting.
It is. And it's perfect for the setting.
I would boo them on principle for coming out in this. Even, like, I'm not a Cubs fan, but if I was, I would still boo them just for not having a good uniform anymore. It's offensive.
It is offensive. So can I ask a kind of bigger question about all three of the leagues that we've talked about? The NFL, the NBA, and MLB. Are we going to look back on this era and go, Nike did so much damage to the visual sort of palette? You could throw college football in there too, for that matter. I think Nike's done an unconscionable job over the course of the last 20 years with all three of these leagues. And Nike's only had baseball for a couple of years. So, I mean, caveats all around. And I don't even think they've had basketball for that long. But they've had football since 2012. It's been a disaster. And I don't know. We people of a certain age, again, and I would be interested to ask like a 15-year-old about this. But like, Nike was the iconic kind of shoe sports company of our lifetimes. And yet, I look at all these disastrous uniforms, and they're responsible for all of them. And I wonder if I'm not giving Nike like a lifetime pass just for coming up with Jordans when I was in fourth grade. Because the rest of it has been pretty bad. Your thoughts?
It's definitely going to be one of those things where, like, you know, there's always eras in sports. Usually it's attached to morals, you know.
Yeah.
This is the pre-segregation or the pre-integration era, the segregation era. This is the drug era. This is, you know, the performance enhancing drugs or whatever. And or dead ball era, these different things. I do think this is going to be one that they look back on, and it's like the it will probably go down as like the branding era.
Yeah.
When the product on the field was surpassed in popularity by the branding and marketing of the teams. And championships almost matter less than revenue. I don't know, probably not almost. They definitely matter less than revenue. And and who knows when this era ends. But I think it will. At some point there's going to be sort of a pendulum swing towards stability. These things always happen.
Yeah.
But it's like, if you can read books now about how Nike changed the NBA. It changed the popularity of the NBA, the globalism of the NBA. It created superstars. The economics of the game completely shifted. It became a thing where style mattered a ton. And and now we're just seeing the excess of that, where instead of kind of putting something out there and letting it catch fire, they're like fire hosing us with styles.
Yeah. I mean, Nike worked initially because the two players that they hung their hats on early in their life cycle, Steve Prefontaine and Jordan, just worked. Like, they were superstars. They were rock stars. They worked at the highest level of, like, whatever that magical ingredient of like human interaction and caring about a person is. Those two individuals just pumped it out and drove.
Well, then a few years later, Tiger Woods. I mean,
I was just going to say, the Tiger thing worked too. He was their golf line. He put, you know, in a popular way, he kind of put golf on the map. You talk about those three people and it's like that really worked, but that worked irregardless of, and I know that's not a word, but it worked regardless of what Jordan had on his feet. You know what I mean? The Nike Air Jordan 1 could have been a burlap sack and we would have all loved it because it was Jordan who was wearing it. You know what I mean? And it happened to be that it was a appealing design and, you know, very cool for its time and the whole thing. But, you know, it was Jordan that sold that shoe more than the design of the shoe itself. I mean, if like Terry Cummings is wearing that shoe, nobody cares about it. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's interesting to just look at the whole Nike thing.
Yeah, and I think Nike is kind of, they're sort of at the too big to fail, and they they have lost that connection to people. And they're sort of like, if we make it, it is good, instead of going, it is good if the people you look to say it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's, well, also, yeah. This is very corporate. What they're doing, these mm-hmm. are corporate uniforms. This is, I mean, like, yeah. what if Nike took over the post office? What would our mailmen be wearing? Like, that's exactly. essentially the same thing. We're just looking at uh-huh. uniforms for working, except we're yeah. supposed to buy them.
Yeah. No, exactly. And, yeah, it's an interesting kind of, like, consumer, I don't know, rat in a maze sort of dynamic where, like, it seems like they're pushing that envelope of, like, how many new things can we put out that they'll still buy? And we want to tiptoe the consumer right up to that line of, like, oh, they're sick of it. They've had so many, like, little food pellets that they're puking now. But they're walking us right up to that line, and it's unappealing to me. And it's either because it's actually unappealing or because I'm old, and I'm not sure which which reason it is. Maybe a little bit of both. But yeah, and even on the Prefontaine Jordan Woods continuum, I think it started with a really good product. You know what I mean? Like, running shoes were deficient until, you know, Prefontaine and Phil Knight and the other guy, like, came up with a better way to make a running shoe. So that one started with, like, a great product and an iconic kind of rock star-ish person to sell it. Whereas now it's just like, we're not even claiming that these jerseys or shoes or whatever are better. They're just different. Like, there's just a different design and different colors, and here, buy it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, same with basketball shoes. Like, you know, not that the first Jordans were great shoes, but, like, basketball shoes were pretty, you went from, like, the Converse, you know, Converse All-Star canvas yeah. shoe era to just sort of, like, mediocre Reeboks, Adidas, Nikes. They're just kind of meh. And they filled a void. We're going to make better shoes, and we're going to make better-looking shoes. Running shoes were, like, destroyed people's feet. It was like running in dress shoes. And then they came out with, what was it, Nike Cortez was one of the first big ones that went crazy. In the, 60s, 70s, early 70s. And, and now it's, you know, now running shoes are styles, but they're not the same brand. Like, you can go get, there's 72 different brands of great running shoes that people also wear for fashion. And I think, I think what's tricky about this is that the uniforms have never been, like, no fan has ever bought a team jersey for functional reasons. You buy them for attachment to the team reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we're moving from attachment to a team to fashion statement only. The only reason you buy a Padres City Connect jersey is because it's kind of a bold fashion statement, not a, like, I love the Padres. If you love the Padres, you're going to get, You're probably gonna get like a retro Manny Machado looking jersey, or you're gonna go back and get a Tony Gwynn or a Steve Garvey or something like that, and like, it's gonna look and feel different.
Yeah, no question. Pipe, we've been at this for upwards of an hour. We should land the plane. This was a lot of fun, man. I've been kind of mentally thinking through a list of all time Terrys. Your Terry McLaurin comment got me thinking. I mentioned Terry Cummings, Terry Francona. I'm sure we're forgetting Terry's. Terry Bradshaw. Yeah, Terry Bradshaw is probably on the all-time Terry Rushmore, I would think. But anybody we're forgetting?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm trying to think. I feel like there's been one or two other football players named Terry. But it's not a name that you associate with, like, athletic greatness.
Huh. Yeah. I'm sure our listeners will have other Terry ideas. There's got to be a hockey player or two named Terry, who were legendary over the years. But Terry Kinnard played for the Giants, was a D-back in the 80s. We're going deep cuts now. But Pipe, this has been fun, man. We've done what we always do, in that we've talked a little bit of sports and a lot of uniform aesthetics. And until next time. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. Be sure to visit thehappyrant.com to check out our merchandise, learn more about upcoming live events, and listen to past episodes.
Has fear stolen your peace? I'm Jennifer Slattery, lead host of the Faith Over Fear podcast, helping you fight your fears and grow your faith. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.